This is Truth Be Told, a Sheridan Life radio podcast exploring the complex issues affecting Indigenous communities in Canada. I'm your host, Danielle Orr. The Wet'suwet'en Territory covers about 22,000 square kilometers of land in northwestern British Columbia. The Coastal GasLink pipeline would run directly through the territory over about 190 kilometers. The dispute over this has become about more than just a pipeline project. It's become a dispute about the history of colonialism, failures to achieve reconciliation, and going back on Section 35 of the Constitution Act of 1982, which recognizes Indigenous treaty rights. This is an old, unresolved issue of Indigenous peoples establishing self-governance over their land and being able to govern their affairs in traditional ways. Railway blockades and protests started in BC and have spread across the country, to the point where CN Rail had to shut down their eastern network and Via Rail had to stop all trains at one point last week. The Canadian government maintains that although people have the right to protest in a democracy, the blockades are illegal and should be stopped. The RCMP have maintained a presence at many of these blockades and have arrested protesters. The Wet'suwet'en chiefs say that they will not engage in a discussion with the government until the RCMP remove their presence from their territory or the blockade sites. This is because they don't agree with the presence of force, having an involvement in peaceful discussion. As mentioned in previous episodes, the RCMP have a complicated and shaky relationship with Indigenous peoples that stems back through generations. On top of this, many have compared the RCMP's role in these protests to the Iperwash inquiry, which looked at the death of Dudley George, who was shot by RCMP at a First Nations protest in 1995. The RCMP did move its officers out of an outpost on Wet'suwet'en territory, but reportedly continues to patrol the area, which doesn't meet the full demands of the chiefs. While I was making this podcast, there have been a number of updates to this story, as will be expected in the next few weeks as well. Protests continue to crop up across the country and show no signs of slowing yet. This includes Ontario, specifically in Tiendanega, where police arrested 10 protesters after railway blockades reached their third week. The government maintains that police are an independent body from them, acting in accordance with their duty to uphold injunctions and the law. New blockades in Hamilton and Toronto have also resulted in GO Transit having to suspend some of their services. Protests in Caledonia resulted in highway closures near Six Nations Reserve. The Canadian Federation of Agriculture said on Tuesday that although CN is working to get trains running again, the Canadian supply chain is, and I quote, at a tipping point. People are angry on both sides. People want discussion, resolution, and in turn, de-escalation. Hereditary chiefs have said talks with the government with the aim of removing RCMP from Wet'suwet'en territory are being undertaken, and they hope to meet with federal government officials on Thursday, February 27th, tomorrow. I attended a protest in the form of an organized march that occurred in Toronto on February 17th, which was last week. I spoke to some of the protesters at the march to see what they had to say about the nature of the protests and the blockades, and how disruptive it's been for the transportation of people and goods across the country.
It's a very nice day today, and we're here in support of the Wet'suwet'en people out west and the native people across Canada, actually.
We're very tired of the government ignoring our people and all the issues that are important to us.
The Native people have gotten the short of the stick for a long, long time. And this was coming. And I don't know how it's going to turn out in the end, but...
How do you feel about the widespread support across Canada?
I think it's fantastic. Chimiigwech, for all your support all across Canada, every nation, rise up.
And so obviously there's been a lot of blockades across the country. Today it's a little bit different of a protest. Why are you doing it in this way today? And would you do a blockade, for example?
Well, we're in prayer. And it's peaceful, and we do it out of love and respect for our ancestors and our future generations coming in behind us.
Yeah, just like my wife said here, we're here for the Creator and the spirits and the ancestors before us. They're calling us to step up.
And how do you feel about the impact of the blockades?
I think this is the only way that the government will take a hard look at what we're talking about. And unfortunately, the blockades are the blockades. So this is probably the only way that they're going to listen to us.
Well, I'm here with many, many Canadians, as you can see. We're concerned about the way the Canadian state and governments are dealing with the Wet'suwet'en peoples and on the Indigenous question as a whole. The Canadian government claims that they are operating under rule of law. The problem in this situation, the issue is that the Wet'suwet'en are living on unceded territory. And the Supreme Court, the Federal Court, none of the courts have any jurisdiction over their territory. So what Canada is doing is illegal. And I think people are very much concerned about that and the use of violence. I think that the government should sit with the hereditary chiefs who have legal authority to speak for their people and to find a political solution, which means no RCMP, no occupation of their lands, and negotiate with them for a solution. This is what they are calling for, and instead of listening to them and the voices of all the people here, very concerned about the historical legacy of Canada's treatment of Indigenous people, Canadians are very aware that what has happened. So all the talk about reconciliation without a new relationship based on nation to nation with Indigenous people is bogus. If the thing is this, human beings have a right to protest injustice, the condition that oppresses them. It's easy to talk about nonviolent versus violent and how this protest is better than the other one because this is violent, this isn't. What do you think the RCMP is doing in the territory? The Canadian state is violent and is acting in violent ways. The bans, first of all, bans under huge pressure. Because they're living in reservations, kind of ghettos, reservations, they don't have many resources and huge pressures put on them. Bans were created by the Indian Act in the 19th century. They have no hereditary decision-making power. In this particular case, the hereditary chiefs are the ones in charge. So even though the Canadian government can get a small group of bands to agree under pressure, they have no authority. They cannot speak for the people. So I think Canadians need to understand that. The mass media talks about that. They say, well, what about the people that agree? It's not right. The thing is, there's no justice here, and we want justice.
It's important to note that not all Wet'suwet'en people oppose the pipeline. Just as many are divided on this topic, so too are Indigenous groups in the area. The rise of blockades across the country are a visual representation of the breakdown of relationships between the Canadian government and Indigenous peoples, It also shows a breakdown between indigenous groups and people on this issue. In September 2018, Coastal GasLink said it signed agreements with 20 First Nations band councils along the proposed route of the pipeline, which included band councils from the Wet'suwet'en Nation. So this means that all the First Nations bands except Hagwelegget Nation Village Council signed agreements with Coastal GasLink. Those who agree with the project have said it would help communities by creating jobs for Indigenous peoples and possibly lifting those communities from poverty. However, 13 hereditary chiefs of the 5 Wet'suwet'en clans oppose the pipeline. They say that although agreements have been signed by their nation's band councils, it still must have hereditary chief authorization to continue the project, which it doesn't. Therefore, they say the agreements don't apply to traditional lands. This has caused a bit of confusion, understandably. Why would they oppose the pipeline if their band council and elected chief have approved it? Before contact with settlers, Indigenous peoples who occupied their land had traditional forms of governance based on leadership by clan leaders, otherwise known as hereditary chiefs. Hereditary chiefs inherit their title and the responsibility of preserving cultural traditions and protocols passed down for generations. It's like a cultural law system. Not all First Nations have hereditary chiefs, as it depends on whether their lineage is continued over time. When the government introduced the Indian Act in 1876, they imposed an elected chief and council system. This meant that communities also had to start electing leaders that would be accountable to the federal government. This is why there can be a hereditary chief and an elected chief in a community at the same time. This makes things difficult when there are differing opinions between elected and hereditary chiefs, especially when trying to grant approval for resource development projects like the Coastal GasLink pipeline. This situation is ever evolving. I urge listeners to watch what happens tomorrow and in the coming weeks. The resolution to this issue may set a precedent not only for similar disputes in the future, but also relations between the Canadian government and Indigenous groups in the future. Special thanks to Cynthia King, Ojibwe from Christian Island, and Rick Eiserhoff, Cree from James Bay Lowlands. Also, special thanks to Philip Fernandez. This podcast is brought to you by Sheridan Life Radio.